This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome in to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I'm Chris Bleck along with Jesse Rogers, sitting in for David Kaplan today. You can watch us on Twitch. Search for the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. Jesse, we're going to talk some football here. And when we look at the Bears offseason, they upgraded at quarterback. But I think the major question is, how much did they actually upgrade the position? Because is Nick Foles really that much better than Mitchell Trubisky?
I'm with you. I agree. I think they just got another decent quarterback, but not necessarily one that's going to, you know, set records and stuff. I think it was a sort of underwhelming move, but one that was probably needed. They had to double up at that position. I'm with you. I agree. Are they that much better? They're better, but are they that much better to make a big, big difference and obviously waste capital on? I don't know the answer to that, but they certainly needed to do something.
Let's talk to Bill Barnwell from ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Bill Barnwell today. He released his top eight of the ranking the NFL off seasons from worst to first. The Bears are not in the top eight. In fact, the Bears come in at 31st, and I think a lot of that has to do with the quarterback position, the moves Ryan Pace has made this offseason. So, Bill, how do you see this kind of playing out for the Chicago Bears in this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a really interesting situation, of course. You know, Nick Foles knows the system. That was the famous quote we heard, or a famous thing we heard when he was acquired by the Bears, justified him, you know, coming in, getting three guaranteed years on a new deal. Not that much money per year, but, you know, about $8 million a year or three guaranteed seasons. So he's going to be there for a while. And they gave up a fourth round pick to acquire him. And I didn't love all that. I mean, I don't mind adding Nick Foles. I think the player himself is fine. You know, a guy who has been, obviously, when he's hot, he's red hot. You know, he can be one of the best quarterbacks in football when he's on his game. But a guy who just cannot stay healthy. Injury issues every time a team has expected him to play 10 games or more over the course of a season. So you're going to need Trubisky anyway. You're going to have, you know, a guy there who can come in if Nick Foles does get hurt. But I just, you know, looking at it, you know, would they have been better off holding on to that fourth round pick, signing Andy Dalton for, you know, $6 million or $5 million on a 1 year deal? I do think that would have been a lot better. I think there was more quarterbacks out there. You know, the supply was more than the demand for those kind of borderline starter quarterbacks. So I don't mind getting Foles. I just think they gave up a little too much to do so.
Yeah, I think Bear fans are grateful there's 32 teams in the league, so they're not last in this ranking. And I was gonna like argue with you a little bit on how do you put the Packers better or even the Lions, but I would imagine when you get down to 31, 30, 29, 32, you're probably splitting hairs a little bit. I mean, yeah. Were the Bears 31st by a mile? Tell us about the ranking a little bit.
I will say the Texans were last by a mile. I think we could all agree the Texans had a pretty rough offseason. I think it was Texans 32, and then a bunch of teams kind of in the next tier, the Bears on that tier as well, the Packers as well. I just think when I look at the Bears, you know, if you ask around the league and you say, just ask 10 people, hey, what was the worst signing of the offseason? I think half of them would say the Jimmy Graham signing. And, you know, Jimmy Graham is a player who obviously, you know, at his peak, very talented, you know, a disruptive force in the passing game, a guy who you had to change your defense to play. But anyone who's seen him in Green Bay over the past couple of years, he has not been that guy in an offense that was absolutely begging for someone to be that guy besides Devontae Adams, a guy who has lost a step as a route runner, a guy who really is a dismal blocker, if we're being honest. You know, bring him in for 1 year on a $2 million contract, sure, you have no issue with that, but you know, to give him about $9 million a year, you know, to give him a no trade clause, I just, that contract seemed to just make believe in what the Bears were evaluating when it came to, you know, tape and it came to what they were planning on doing. So I think that's why they sort of dropped below the other teams, is that other teams might have had questionable free agent signings. I think the Jimmy Graham signing was, you know, really the absolute worst signing any team made this offseason.
Bill Barnwell, I'm with Jesse Rogers and Chris Bleck in for Cap here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Bill, you know, you mentioned the fourth round pick for Nick Foles. Also, Ryan Pace in this draft gave up a fourth round pick next year for a fifth rounder this year. And I feel like Bears fans justify Ryan Pace's means to an end by suggesting that he's making moves to win now. And what I've seen over the last couple of years, and you covered the entire league, when you have GMs who are constantly giving up capital in drafts to either move up or do whatever they're doing to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish in the short term, do you ever see this actually working out in the long term for teams when you're covering all of the teams in the National Football League?
I would say almost never. I have to think about a team that maybe it worked out for. But here's what I always look at. Here's my argument. Ryan Pace, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but he's made several trades with the Patriots where he's traded up. And if you're making trades with the Patriots to trade up, that's a bad idea. The Patriots know more about the draft than just about anybody. So I would not be making trades with the smartest organizations of football. They're saying, hey, yeah, we'll take the other side of that deal. You're fine. We'll let you move up. I think it's frustrating because you look at Ryan Pace's track record. I think about the Trubisky trade, for example, or it was, you know, moving up and trading up a couple of mid-round picks. His mid-round picks in that draft were the best picks he made. It was Eddie Jackson. It was Tariq Cohen. Those guys are really good. You know, if anything, you'd want Ryan Pace to have more of those fourth and fifth-round picks to get a couple more shots because he has been a guy who has found pretty valuable players in that range. So, you know, I understand trading up once in a while. Obviously, everyone does it. And I think there's just across the league, if you look at the evidence, look at the history, teams are pretty overconfident when it comes to trading up. Usually it's a bad idea. And Pace has done it over the past 3 years more frequently than just about anybody else. Sometimes it's worked, but other times, obviously, it's not. And it's cost them, you know, valuable draft picks in the process.
Visiting with Bill Barnwell here on ESPN 1000. He ranked all 32 teams and their offseason. The Bears are ranked 31st. Can I go back to the Jimmy Graham thing? So, I mean, they're not going to say this publicly. In fact, I think they defended it even after drafting Kmet. But that's my question. If the draft is held before a free agency and they get Kmet and they know they're getting Kmet, do they sign Jimmy Graham?
I think they might sign Jimmy Graham. Maybe they wouldn't be as aggressive about doing so. I mean, you know, you'd figure Kmet's going to be the number two guy. Obviously, I think they're not going to probably hold on to Adam Shaheen much longer. You would figure that, you know, Jimmy Graham will be the number one guy. They play different roles. Kmet's going to be more of an inline tight end. I would figure they see Graham as someone who can split out a little more frequently or going to at least try to have him, you know, be that guy. I think about, you know, this offense is based on the Kansas City Chiefs offense. They love to line up three guys on one side and then put Travis Kelce on the other side and have him be sort of a physical mismatch. Wouldn't shock me if Matt Nagy tried to use Jimmy Graham in that Kelce role where he was the physical mismatch on the other side of the field. Will that work? You know, might work here and there. I could see him being a guy who, you know, can physically overpower cornerbacks on slants and, you know, sort of be that guy who, you know, can catch contested balls. And obviously you want one of those guys on your roster. But I think they probably would have not been as aggressive, maybe made a better offer, maybe had a better deal in the long run because they weren't as aggressive in signing Graham.
A follow-up to that, you know, just thinking about this, and I don't know if you've written it or it's been talked about, but the draft comes after free agency. Is that ever been a topic? Like, is that the way teams like it? Would they rather have the draft before free agency? Does it matter? What are your thoughts on that?
That's interesting. You know, I've heard NFL people say, hey, what if we switch this? Would it be better? I think it could be in some ways. I mean, obviously, you know, you have the combine, and even though the combine is, you know, technically associated with the draft, you're doing both, really. You're evaluating draft prospects, and you're also, you know, hitting free agency, and you're hitting the, you know, you're talking to agents, you're talking to players. You're not supposed to, but everyone does it. So you're hitting both those preparations right then. So I think the order is, you know, as long as you have the combine, I think you can order it either way. I think that teams, because they see free agents as more reliable, I think they'd rather have free agency first so you can sort of lock in those positions and know, hey, you know, if we want to get a starter, we know we can come away with a starter if we get that free agent first as opposed to the draft where, you're drafting typically more for the future. But I think you could do it either way. I'd like to see, you know, how the league would change if they switched it up. So maybe it'll change it in the future. Who knows?
That's Bill Barnwell. I'm Chris Black with Jesse Rogers here on ESPN 1000. Sing in for David Kaplan today here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Bill, if you look long-term for the quarterback position for the Chicago Bears, how do you think this plays out? Not necessarily for next season, but the year after. Mm-hmm. What do you think Ryan Pace is going to do to solidify a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's hoping that one of these guys prove to be the franchise quarterback he's been expecting. I mean, Nick Foles, like I said, under contract in terms of guaranteed money for 3 years. So, 2020, 2021, 2022. It's not that much money, but he can, you know, he could be a high-end backup. He could be a low-end starter. I think it's tough to imagine him turning into a top 10 quarterback at this point. With Mitch Trubisky, obviously, this organization was all in on Mitch this time last year. Everyone thought he was a franchise quarterback. There were people who were skeptical. And obviously, I think there's reason to be skeptical, but that story's not done either. I mean, you know, Mitch could take a step forward. Maybe he has a great offseason. Maybe, you know, something clicks. It's not out of the question either. I wouldn't want to count on it, but, you know, stranger things have happened. So I think at the end of the day, you know, Ryan Pace is sitting here saying, hey, let's hope one of these two guys is our guy. And then if we have to hit it next offseason, you know, we'll figure out a way to do that. Now, obviously, I think that's the most likely scenario is that, you know, in 2021, we're looking at a roster that has Nick Foles as a, you know, a high-end backup, and the Bears will either sign a free agent, they'll go after someone in the draft. I think they will make a move to add a new quarterback in the 2021 offseason.
You know, in your piece of ranking the 32 teams under what went wrong for the Bears, you mentioned the contract, acquiring Foles and that contract. Do you think this was a case that they know it was a negative to know the guy so well, to have that relationship, so they wanted him so bad because they knew him, like there was emotion involved in it instead of the strict business kind of thinking that you need?
I mean, you know, I think that's part of it. I think there was just that idea of, oh, well, you know, we've already had him. We know he's a good quarterback. We know he knows our system. When at the end of the day, I mean, you have to trust your coaches to know the system, right? Like, you know, Bill Belichick has brought in some guys from his past, but you never hear Bill Belichick say, oh, we have to bring in this guy because he knows our system. Bill Belichick's going to teach him the system, and the system is going to work around what that guy does best. So when it comes to Nick Foles, I mean, Nick Foles is an air raid quarterback going back through college. In Philadelphia, you know, he worked under Andy Reid, worked under Chip Kelly, you know, worked in some spread concepts, was with some pretty good coaches, especially Andy Reid, who's made, you know, every quarterback look better. In Kansas City, very briefly, with Doug Peterson and Andy Reid, and then back to Philadelphia, where he really struggled before they really installed more of the RPOs, a lot more of the air raid stuff that we saw Nick Foles succeed with at Arizona in college. And then Nick Foles used that stuff in the postseason to have that legendary postseason run. So, you know, I just think you can sort of teach a quarterback your system. This is just me being old fashioned and antiquated. Like, the reason you pay coaches, the reason you pay Matt Nagy, the reason you pay, you know, the entire offensive staff is to teach your quarterback what they need to do. And now, adding Nick Foles, does it make it easier? Yeah, in some ways, but is the difference between Nick Foles and Andy Dalton or Teddy Bridgewater or any of these other guys, you know, the difference between, you know, Andy Dalton getting $3 or $4 million from the Cowboys versus Nick Foles getting $24 million guaranteed and giving up a fourth-round pick? I just think that difference is pretty big, and I think that you'd rather have that money to spend elsewhere on your roster.
Thank you, Bill. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
That's Bill Barnwell from ESPN. Follow him on Twitter, at Bill Barnwell. Jesse, a lot of good information there. Coming up next, I want to ask you, is there value on betting the Bears to win the division? We'll debate it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company, sports talk while you're on the clock.
Chris Black, Jesse Rogers, singing in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. Support Sylvie during his journey fighting cancer and help others facing the same fight. You can purchase your Sylvie Strong t-shirts now at obviousshirts.com. All proceeds go to the B Foundation. There are shirts for men and women, and one design was created by Sylvie's son, Mason. Have you seen this, Jesse? It's an awesome shirt.
Yes, I have.
They're on sale now at obviousshirts.com. The Mason-designed shirt is really cool.
Yes. I'm like Mason's godfather. I mean, I know Mason well. I think the kid has more talent than his dad. I will say that right here, right now. And that is an awesome shirt. I'm going to order a bunch for my family. And Sylvie's going to kick some butt, and Mason's going to make some money for everybody.
Yeah, it's a really cool shirt, so check it out. Obviousshirts.com. Support Sylvie. Support the V Foundation. Really cool cause. And I'm telling you, the shirt is really cool. It's a picture. I assume it's Mason drawing a picture of Sylvie, right?
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me.
And it says Sylvie is strong at the top.
Right on the money. I think he nailed it.
Oh, come on, Jess. How old is Mason?
Six, I think. All right.
Right on the money. It's a cute photo. I don't know if it's right on the money. Come on.
Well, Sylvie's going through a tough time. Doesn't mean we can't bust him a little bit.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
All right.
I think he wants that.
Jess, when we take a look at the NFC North, we were just talking with Bill Barnwell about the Chicago Bears ranking 31st on his offseason rankings. And when we kind of dive into the Chicago Bears, I continue to look at the rest of the division and where they stack up with the Minnesota Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. Before we get into the value of betting on the division, how do you think those two teams kind of played out their off seasons? The Vikings loaded up. They had a ton of draft picks, and I think 12-plus draft picks in the first couple of rounds, that is. That adds a lot of good talent to a roster that seemed to start to get a little old last year for the Minnesota Vikings. I know they have Kirk Cousins, a quarterback that not a lot of people trust, but he's serviceable. He's a decent quarterback. He's not great. He's decent. And then you look at the Packers. They went 13-3, and they got trucked by the 49ers in the playoffs, and you have to ask yourself, were they as good as their record said they were, or are they as bad as they looked the last time we saw them losing to the 49ers? And then they spend their first draft pick on a quarterback, thus you get the reaction you get from Aaron Rodgers and others around Green Bay in this offseason. So when you see what the Bears did and what Ryan Pace did, how do you stack them? I know I left the Lions out, but they're the Lions. So how do you stack them up against the Vikings and the Packers?
Well, first of all, I think that the Packers, even if they were a little bit overrated, maybe they were a 10 or 11 win team, they're still better than the Bears. They were still better than the Bears. So what if they get trounced by the Niners? It's in the playoffs and it's going to happen. You're on the road. Like that didn't bother me so much. They were better than the Bears because their quarterback was better than the Bears quarterback. You don't have to go much deeper than that. And that is still the case until proven differently. So even if they didn't add on a lot, they still have a better quarterback than anything the Bears can trot out there. Now, Minnesota's an interesting team, and they have been over the last few years because they look like they could win the Super Bowl anytime they play at home. And then they go on the road, and they're not so good. That especially was true 2 years ago, maybe more than last year. So I almost, like, from year to year, never know what to make of the Vikings because of that aspect. They've just looked so good on defense at home, and then they give up points on the road, and quarterback plays up and down. So I have no problem saying the Bears could overtake Minnesota like they did a couple years ago. Green Bay, still a little different story because now you have Rodgers with a chip on his shoulder. I don't care if they didn't add a ton of weapons or not, and there's still time to add through trades or whatever. So I have no problem saying the Bears could overtake Minnesota, and that might be – maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's the other way around. Other way around. Maybe the team they could overtake is Green Bay, but until – they get a quarterback that could play at Aaron Rodgers level, there's no way I could make that prediction, even though they did win the division over Green Bay a couple years ago.
Well, it's an interesting point you make because I guess the response to that is, what is Aaron Rodgers' level these days? You know, last season in the 16 games he played, it's not like he was out there as an MVP. He did struggle at times, and he had the touchdowns interception ratio, which was really in his favor, 26-4, which was outstanding. But doesn't it seem to be to the point where Aaron Rodgers now has gotten to this, he's fallen past the peak of his career, where now the team is trying to win around him, even though he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, giving him full respect. But don't you get the vibe this offseason that the Packers are planning for the future and they want to be more run-oriented? They want to limit Rodgers as the guy with the full control of the offense. Doesn't it kind of feel that way? Like,
well,
they're
certainly planning for the future. That became obvious by
their
draft pick.
With the quarterback, too. But like, I feel like the Packers, the way that they want to attack teams going forward would be up front, run the football, and then use Rodgers in spots, kind of like the way Brady has been used the last couple of years with the Patriots.
That makes sense. But remember how good Brady has looked most of the time. Maybe not as much last year, but most of the time. And so I get, as they get older, protect them a little bit more with more around them. I get that, a run game and stuff. I get that, but he's still dropping balls in with 17 times the precision that Trubisky was. So I don't know. I mean, your season evolves every year differently, and maybe they have to turn into this pass happy team because they're not running well or injuries or whatever. And my point is, I think Rodgers still has that ability, and we are going to find out shortly if Brady has that ability, because he's got weapons and obviously the weather down there. He can be throwing all 16 games if he wants. And I don't know. I think they both still have more talent than Trubisky or Foles, obviously. I mean, that's not going out on a limb.
So if we go to Sportsbook Online, here's the odds for the division, the NFC North. The Packers and the Vikings are both at plus 180. The Bears are in third at plus 400. The Lions are at plus 600 fourth. Do you see any value at plus 400 in saying, okay, I'll make a bet on the Bears, because I get it, the Packers and the Vikings are better teams probably right now than we saw the Bears give us last season and throughout the offseason moves. But at plus 400, there could be value there if the Bears really hit on everything. If Nick Foles really incorporates himself in this offense and the offense gives you more than 17 points per game, there could be some value there. How do you play that?
Yeah, I'd be hard to disagree with that. Absolutely. I mean, they're just a year removed from winning the division and looking so dominant on defense. A better offense, I think, will help their defense. I think we saw, one side of the ball drag the other side down a little bit last year. They signed a huge pass rusher. Still have Mac. Hopefully not on the other side of things too much. Absolutely, you find value at plus 400. And that's why, again, Minnesota might be the cream of the crop, but they are just less predictable. I think Green Bay is predictable because of that quarterback. I mean, is Green Bay going to go 3-13? Like, I don't see the drop that I think Minnesota could go either way. I don't think Green Bay has that big drop. So I feel like if you want money in the bank, you bet on Green Bay. If you want to go with the value, you go with the Bears. If you're just going to take the wild card, I think Minnesota has been that team the last few years. So that's the way I look at it. Absolutely, a plus 400, there's value there.
You make a good point, because I don't know if the Bears win the division, I don't think it's because of a drop from the Packers or the Vikings. I think it's because the Bears improve so much. Like, I understand your point. Like, the Vikings and the Packers, like, what, at worst, they're going to be 500? Like, I don't see the Vikings or the Packers being one of the worst teams in the NFC, where they're only winning six games, unless Rodgers gets completely hurt, doesn't play at all, or the Vikings, Cousins doesn't play at all. It completely flips the season. But the only way this happens is if the Bears improve.
Yeah, I think the window for the win total for the Vikings is larger. Like, their worst case might be 8 wins. I think the worst case for Green Bay is like 9 or 10. Like, I think they're still in that range where they're going to be above 500. This is just, I guess, how much respect I have for Rodgers, and I'm guessing he's going to play with a chip on his shoulder. And again, even if they're overrated at 13-3, you can't say they were overrated by like 4 or 5 games. Maybe they were a 10-win team playing above their heads. Whatever, that's still a 10-6 is still pretty good. The Bears would love to be that. So that's the way I look at it. The win total is just, that window is larger for the Vikings than the Packers or the Bears. It's anywhere from 6-11 probably, right?
Yeah. And the other thing I try and do when I look at football futures for the upcoming season is, you look at all these divisions in the NFC, and I'm not sold that I can find more than 2 teams that are guaranteed to be awful. Like the Redskins in the NFC East, I think we could all agree they're probably going to be the worst team of that division. I get that the Lions probably going to be the worst team in the division in the NFC North. I mean, is there the possibility that they improve enough and the Bears don't take a step and Foles doesn't turn out? And if you look at the stats of Foles and say the offense doesn't necessarily click the way they think it will, do the Bears take a step back? I think that's a hard sell. So it's probably the Lions. You go to the South, I don't think you can pinpoint a team that's going to be the worst, because I think Carolina is going to be scrappy. I think the Panthers, even though they're on the board, are the highest odds, the least likely to win their division. I think Matt Rhule and their new quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater, I think that's a team that will be pretty competitive. So I don't think you have a, quote, bad team in the South. And you go to the West. I mean, look at the West. The 49ers, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, which everyone's talking about as a sleeper team for this upcoming season, and the Rams. Are the Rams going to be one of the worst teams in the NFC? So, like, if you look at the conference, what, you got two teams? The Giants, maybe? But they have a quarterback for the future. They kind of are starting to figure that out. So, like, what, the Lions and the Redskins are the only two terrible teams in the conference?
It's very funny you bring this up, because I was thinking similar thoughts. And if you look at the National League in baseball, same thing. It's like the Marlins, and the way I look at it is, who's rebuilding? Now, football, we don't have the same terminology. Rebuilding is a little different, but it's similar, you know.
Right.
Only the Marlins are a truly rebuilding team in the National League. I feel like in the NFC, you bring up some really good points. I mean, Carolina, in a lot of ways, because of it's a new era quarterback, I feel like it's a rebuilding situation. Maybe Washington is number two. And I don't know. I don't know right. Who else is really rebuilding. I agree with you about the West. Totally fine. Arizona up and coming. Detroit's not rebuilding with Stafford there. Maybe they should be, but they're 3-12. Anyway, they could pop up and win 6 games, 7.
Right,
you never
right.
know when you have a franchise-type quarterback, although he's not the same as he was. So I guess the Giants a little bit, right? So there are two or three teams, but the bulk, there is a bulk there that are 6 to 10-win teams. And now you have to, you know, obviously upgrade Tampa Bay and Atlanta, as bad as we thought they were, they went 7-9 last year. So I'm exactly with you. Reminds me of the National League of Baseball. And that's the way it should be. Everybody, even if you're not great, at least you haven't stripped down your team like we've seen in baseball, because that's just awful for that fan base, you know, for 2 or 3, 4 years. You don't see that as much as football. You can recover and be a better team quickly.
Horace Grant was on Cap Show earlier this week saying that he was upset with Michael Jordan. But why? We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Coverage of The Last Dance is presented by Coors Light. Jesse Rogers, Chris Black, sing in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Jesse, I thought the documentary was fantastic. I wasn't missing out on anything. I thought it was exactly what we wanted. I think it quenched my thirst when it came for looking forward to something to follow along for the last month. I loved every minute of it.
It's hard not to love every minute of it. I mean, it was just great. I mean, especially for Chicago fans, right? I mean, it's maybe if you're not a Bulls fan, you don't care. But I hope you did, because it was just interesting to learn about a championship team. But for anybody that grew up in Chicago and followed those teams, I mean, how could you not love an inside look, look back, whatever? I mean, I covered the 16 World Series, right? I mean, in 10, 20 years, they'll do something on that. That's the beauty of it, and documenting it and looking back at it, your memory changes, and you have video from them and back then, and then you update it now with interviews. It was great. What's not to like is my point.
Well, I mean, there are some people coming out now after the fact who are in the documentary who do not like it. Now, I the one thing I would say to add to your point is I don't think you had to be from Chicago to love it. I mean, it's the most famous person on the planet who we all really don't get enough of. Because Michael Jordan doesn't do media. He is not on TV. A lot of the greats of the past from the NBA are accessible. They either run teams, so you see them speak all the time, like Magic Johnson, or they're on television. Shaquille O'Neal, Charles Barkley, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett. These guys are accessible. Michael Jordan is not accessible. So being able to see and consume something where it's from his point of view, I think anyone can get behind, especially if you're a sports fan, especially if you're from Chicago. Going back to the people who are upset, let's go to episode 6 of The Last Dance. Horace Grant, was he the leak to Sam Smith in his famous book, The Jordan Rules?
I didn't contribute to that, and that was Horace. He was telling everything that was happening within the group.
You know, as we started winning championships,
and everybody talked about Michael, and then everybody talked about everybody else. I mean, that really pissed off Horace. He felt slighted. He was in Michael's shadow.
No, not one thing have I ever divulged to Sam Smith about my relationship with my former teammates. A lot of people, because Sam and I have a great relationship, use me as a scapegoat, and so be it.
It couldn't have just been Horace. It had to come from a number of different places. You know, it could have been the coaches, it could have been the owners, it could have been management.
Okay, so that was Michael Jordan, Horace Grant, Will Perdue, and B.J. Armstrong was the last voice you heard. Jesse, I played that because I just wanted to clarify. Horace was asked about this in the documentary, right? He was asked about Sam Smith and being the leak?
Yeah,
he gave
you heard it right there.
He gave a response, right? That was Horace Grant in there saying no, absolutely no. Okay, here's Horace Grant on Cap and Company with David Kaplan on Monday. Horace Grant, were you the source for the Jordan rules in Sam Smith's book?
That is a downright, outright, completely lie. Lie, lie, lie. And as I stated, if MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle it like, man, let's talk about it, or we can settle it another way. But yet and still, he goes out and put this lie out that I was the source behind. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends. But the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources, to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? Okay?
Right.
It's only a grudge, man. I'm telling you, it was only a grudge. And I think he proved that during this so-called documentary when if you say something about him, he's going to cut you off. He's going to try to destroy your character. I mean, you know, Charles Barkley, they've been friends for over 20, 30 years, and he said something about Michael's management with the Charlotte Bobcats or the Charlotte Hornets. And then they haven't spoken since then. And my point is that he said I was a snitch, but yet and still after 30 or 35 years, he brings up his rookie year going into one of his teammates' room, his former teammates' room, and saying coke and weed and women. My point is, why in the hell did he want to bring that up? What's that got to do with anything? I mean, if you want to call somebody a snitch, that's a damn snitch right there.
Okay, so that's Horace Grant with Cap. The audio's gone everywhere. Jesse, I wanted to bring this up because he says no in both, The Last Dance and with Cap. But what's the issue here? What's the grudge? Jordan had his own opinion. Will Perdue had his own opinion. B.J. Armstrong had his own opinion. Like, this wasn't some slanted piece towards Grant to slander him. It's crazy. Get over it, Horace Grant.
But who cares what B.J. or Will Perdue said when Jordan, in a documentary watched by 6 million people every week, says that this guy was the source for a book? I don't see why wouldn't Grant get annoyed if it's not true. So
he got a chance to defend himself on the documentary. He spoke after Jordan. In fact, the creators of the film
did defend himself.
Right. It's not like they put Horace's comments in episode 2, and then in episode 9 they had Jordan crushing Horace Grant, so Jordan got the last word. Jordan's the first voice, and then it goes Will Perdue, then Horace Grant. Grant gets his say. What's the problem now?
Okay, but it doesn't mean he feels so he had his say. That's nice, but he's pissed at Jordan.
I
don't know what else to say.
And he's calling Jordan a snitch. He didn't say anything. Everyone knew that cocaine was used in the 80s in the NBA. And Jordan was asked about a cocaine circus. It's not like Jordan's the one that came out and said, hey, by the way, we had this thing that the media called us back in the day. It was called the cocaine circus. Like, what is he snitching on? He didn't snitch on anybody.
Well, I mean, yes, he did in some ways. The people on that team he snitched on.
He didn't name any names.
12 players on that team.
He didn't name any names. He said everyone.
Okay, well, and then Jordan did name a name. That's the difference. Jordan did name a name in Horace Grant.
Well, so, two different stories, though.
Right. No, I get that. But here's the bigger thing. Who gives a darn who gave Sam Smith info for right. a book that's 25 years old? I mean, the fact that they're even arguing about it, my God. I mean, that's the biggest thing about the, you know, maybe the biggest takeaway is that even it's like what we say, money can't buy happiness. Even in the most extremely enjoyable, satisfactory moments in these guys' careers, they found ways to rip it apart, whether it be Krause, Reinsdorf, teammates, whatever. Jordan, it's just, come on, enjoy the moment. And I think they did it, obviously, at different times. But a documentary needs some conflict, right? And so they're gonna highlight those moments. And I think that's what Pippen's probably mad about. They highlighted his three or four negative moments of his career. Meanwhile, what about all those other games that he was great in and moments that he was great in and great teammate and all that? So it's just the nature of a documentary. They're going to find the conflict along with the good stuff.
Well, absolutely. And especially with Scottie Pippen, to be upset, did those things not happen?
No. And here's the thing, you know, producing the sports talk show back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Pippen
hot
was,
button topic, right?
Yeah, and he was a hot button topic, and he was as criticized then as he was after watching these episodes. You know, I mean, people were all over him back then. So my point is, he lived through it. He knows it. How can he be upset that they addressed those things in the documentary? He knows those were hot button moments in his career. How could they not address them? Now, maybe they ignored a negative moment with Steve Kerr. I don't know, but Steve Kerr's not a top 50 player. Pippen was, and he had these very, very public spotlight negative moments in his career. So they're going to come up in a documentary.
Yeah, absolutely. Jesse, have you seen this clip from Karl Malone? He has spoken about the documentary. I guess he didn't want to be a part of the documentary, but E60 got in contact, and they're going to release an episode with Karl Malone. Do you want to hear what he has to say?
Yes, I do.
We'll hear it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company.
Missed something? Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Peace up. Peace A-Town. Up.
This hour, Cap and Company is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs, and for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois. Through it all. Chris Black and Jesse Rogers sing in for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So throughout The Last Dance, Jesse, the only Utah Jazz player we saw and heard from was John Stockton. His running mate, Karl Malone, did not want to be in the documentary, The Last Dance. Did you miss out on hearing from Karl Malone in the doc?
No, not necessarily. I mean, Utah was just a small, small part of the whole thing. So, maybe I will say yes after I hear what he has to say. But no, I didn't think of it as it was going on. It's always nice to hear from the stars, but I didn't think it was a big deal.
Yeah, Karl Malone has some unique thoughts. Here's Karl Malone on E60, a piece that will be released in the near future. Here's Karl Malone on what he thinks about Michael Jordan nowadays.
So when I say the name Michael Jordan, what comes to mind?
Michael Jordan. But Michael Jordan.
Well, what?
Like, what else I need to say? Thank you. Go ahead.
So talk to me about the Game 6 Finals in Utah when he stole the ball.
Why do I have to? But I tell you this, I'm all man. And I accept the responsibility for not winning one, and we was there. We just happened to be playing the Chicago Bulls, which wasn't just Michael Jordan, by the way. And I have the utmost respect for Michael, but I never thought I was playing Michael Jordan. I was playing the Chicago Bulls. But let's not, you know, everybody say this person was a bad man and all that. Well, yes, I give them respect. But I got a setup. I'm a man. And I was a bad son of a bitch, too. So that's how I look at that. And that's who I am. Maybe in my older years, I can call it that bluntly. but I'm just calling like I see it.
Jesse, your thoughts on Karl Malone?
Exactly what are you calling as you see it?
I have no idea.
I don't either. Obviously, there are people out there that don't like Michael Jordan. You know what? I've been around athletes. We all have in our in this business. And the one thing is they're not in awe of other athletes as much as we are. I mean, in some level they are. Obviously, you heard Reggie Miller, but John Stockton
said it on the dock. He said, right, he "We're competing against him."
So, here's the thing: certainly in the moment, they're not in awe. That's the funny thing. If he had done that interview right after the finals, I would get that. But you would think years later he'd be, Michael was the best. We lost. It was fun. You know, good competition. He's still bitter in some ways for some reason. We don't know exactly why, but that's my takeaway that athletes really aren't in awe of other athletes as much as we think they are, and certainly not as much as we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, listen, he's obviously bitter. Hall of Famer, 14-time All-Star, 4-time All-Defensive Player. He was, 14-time All-NBA player. He won the MVP twice. His Utah teams got to the pinnacle. They just didn't beat the greatest player ever. And, you know, you look at Karl Malone and you suggest, like, he is certainly a player from a different era. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jesse, if you take a look at Karl Malone on the court, how would he fit in today's NBA? I'm not quite sold that he would necessarily translate to the success level that he had back in the day if he was playing into today's NBA. There's no more block. There's no more sitting on the block and having Stockton dump it down to you on every single possession.
Yeah. Did he have an okay? I'm trying to remember his game. I mean, didn't he have an okay mid-range jumper? I don't know.
His career number is 51% from the field. So, I mean, listen, yeah. He was also for most of that pretty close to the basket. I think
he's definitely close to the basket, but you might be right. It's hard to know, but he was a big man. He was really good.
He took a total of 310 3-point shots in his career. He hit 85 of them. So, I mean, the most he took in a season was in 1996. 95, he took 41 3-point attempts. 89, 43, 40 in 96. Yeah, it's just a different game.
You're right. I mean, maybe you're right. Here's the thing. Let's ask the bigger question. Is there something more underlying going on here when it comes to these guys and Jordan? Was Michael a bad winner in their mind? Not bad loser, because he never lost, you know, once the 90s came. Was he a bad winner? Was he a sore winner? We saw that in his Hall of Fame speech. Like, maybe that's it. He just was a sore winner from the perspective of these opponents and even teammates.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because there's something underlying going on here.
He might be, but I'm okay with it. You know why? Because that's what this is about. Competition, winning. There's not enough of that in this day and age. Participation trophies and all. Sometimes it's okay to go and kick someone else's butt. It's okay. That's okay. And to be honest, Karl Malone, of all people, for someone to be worried whether or not he's portrayed as a winner or a loser. I mean, if you do any digging into his backstory, he's clearly a loser there. So let's go to Mark in Bridgeport. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, this whole thing about the documentary being too Jordan-centric is so stupid. I mean, it's like watching the Star Wars trilogy and complaining there's too much Luke Skywalker in it. Jordan is the story. Nobody wants to hear about Will Perdue's backstory or Judd Bushler, what he was doing after the game. It's about Jordan. And all this backlash that's coming after the documentary is just the same thing it's always been. It's jealousy. You don't hear any fans complaining about the lack of love for Michael, because we love his killer instinct. We love the way he shows these guys up and pants them every chance he gets. And they're still upset about it. Period.
Great call, Mark.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect call. I think you're right. I mean, you're not going to get many fans to speak poorly about Michael or that documentary or what they learned about him being this killer in practice and everywhere else. We love it.
Yeah, and Jess, you know, like, that's, you go to recent history, that was Kobe, right? Kobe didn't have friends either in the league.
Right.
And
right.
He pissed off a lot of people, including one of his teammates, Shaquille O'Neal, who wanted out of there. Yet Kobe was driven the way Michael was. And I think that maybe there's not enough of that, especially in today's, like, would you, as an NBA fan, be more interested in the sport if there were more guys like Kobe and Michael playing? Opposed to LeBron trying to team up with every dude on the planet?
Yeah, definitely. That's, you know, I stated that earlier. Yeah. I mean, yes, the answer is yes to that. I love that singular focus that that they brought, and maybe it rubbed some people the wrong way, but it turned into what, 11 championships between the two players, Kobe and Michael?
Absolutely. All right, pretty Jesse, good. That's a good point. Let's talk about it. Was Jordan a sore winner? We'll continue the debate coming up next in 2 minutes.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.